चैतन्यमनोपिष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वापरं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवंश्च श्रीरूपं सर्वदत्तं सहगणा रघुनतं वितं त्वं सजीवं सद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदं सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपीश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुति देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितनां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयामधीरये नस्तपेश भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भागवतीतमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय मुखं करोति वाचलं त्वां गुणं गायते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुं विनतारणं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुं विनतारणं There, okay. So this morning we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 20, text number 29, with no purport. Okay. Dadhi. Shirayam salilam tike Sambhojani arbu bhuje Gopai sankarshanam vitaha Dadhyodanam samanitam Shilayam salilantike Sambhojani arbu bhuje Gopa Dadhi odanam Boiled rice mixed with yogurt Samanitam sent Shilayam on a stone Salila Antike near the near the water.
Sambho Daniyai.
Who would take meals with him? Bubuje. He ate. Gopai. Together with the cowherd boys. Sankarsana Anvitaha. In the company of Lord Balaram. Translation and no purport. Yes. Translation by the disciples. Lord Krishna would take his meal of boiled rice and yogurt sent from home. In the company of Lord Sankarsana and the cowherd boys who regularly ate with him. They would all sit down to eat on a large stone near the water. Kindly repeat after me. The Lord would take his meal of boiled rice and yogurt sent from home in the company of Lord Sankarsana and the cowherd boys who regularly ate with him. They would all sit down to eat on a large stone near the water. So it seems like the residents of New Vrindavan have been absorbed in Vrindavan Vila pastimes. This is the chapter entitled The Rainy Season and Autumn. Yeah, many of these verses don't have. Actually, I was just reading a little bit before. Most of the verses don't have purports, but the verses in themselves, as you have all heard in the last whatever, have very significant meanings. So now we have to find some significant meaning to today's verse, which is reminding us of some of the pastimes of Lord Krishna in Vrindavan, who would be on a daily basis, as we all know, the daily activity of Krishna every day was along with the cowherd boys tending the cows all day. And this tradition of actually sending, either taking or sending prasadam meals is still there in India in those villages. Of course, that is reducing on a daily basis. In those villages where people are still doing agriculture and not introducing the rather unconventional and somewhat demoniac modern methods of agriculture. So people, they would generally, we have many things to learn actually. Just thinking I should read this whole chapter to freshen up on the natural ways in which people would live traditionally the natural ways in which not only people live traditionally, but the way which people are meant to live all the time. This is something very important actually for all of us who are members of this Krishna consciousness movement, and of course for those who are living in such communities as New Vrindavan, where we are meant to actually make this happen, so to speak. The point being that this is nicely elaborated as well in various purports of Srila Prabhupada, that the system, there is a system which has been created by Krishna. It is a standard system. It is meant to be the norm for the vast majority of people all over the world. And it is meant to be a norm which should never change or should not change. That norm being that people, the vast majority of people, maybe not 100%, but the vast majority of people are meant to be living this simplified lifestyle where many of the residents of a village, we're talking about Vrindavan village, actually very cultured. Many of our modern people don't understand this simple point that our Vedic culture is based on village life, village lifestyle. The whole Varnasrama system, which is promoting first and foremost the or is meant to connect us rather, and therefore it is molded in that way around the main purpose or main goal of life, which is self-realization. So therefore, to facilitate this process of self-realization is actually very logical. Very, very logical. If the main goal of life is self-realization, then we want to be less entangled with material activities. And we want to take up, or we should want to take up, those activities which will be more conducive, which will facilitate our self-realization. That's one of the important reasons why this lifestyle, which, as we all have heard on many occasions, this lifestyle based on simple living, simplified living and high thinking, is more easily practiced. It is more realizable when we minimize our, we could say, addiction, today's modern addiction for the opposite of today's modern addiction for so-called material advancement. The advancement in Vedic culture is based on spiritual advancement. Material advancement is kept to what we need, basically, not beyond. And therefore, we find in many places in India, we are in the process right now. A few of our projects in India, a few, actually we don't have that many, where devotees are very seriously concentrating on this whole ideology of simple living and high thinking, or reviving the Vrindavan lifestyle, reviving the Vrindavan consciousness. Prabhupada has told us, make Vrindavan, wherever you are, make like Vrindavan, just duplicate Vrindavan. And that means, it means many things. One of them is understanding how it is so important to take up and maintain the simple traditional technologies which have been there, we could say, since time immemorial. Simple technologies means the more natural, simplified ways of doing things which help to keep us in connection with Krishna's material energy, understanding that it is his energy and that it is working in wonderful ways. And that when we do that, it facilitates our ability to remember Krishna, to appreciate Krishna. We learn to appreciate Krishna by appreciating Krishna's energy, by appreciating Krishna's various living entities, especially Krishna's cows, actually. Vedic culture is very, very closely and intimately connected. All the residents, practically, residents in a village, are automatically connected with the land because everyone's growing their own food, because everyone's looking after cows. Everyone is in some way or other connected with cows, especially the Matajis. They're churning butter, they are making all kinds of wonderful sweet preparations that Krishna loves, all of Krishna's friends. That's why they're so healthy. All the residents in Vrindavan are healthy, healthy and opulent. So, because it is a day-long activity to actually look after cows, Krishna would go in the morning after taking some food, and then he would not come back. Rather, food, as is mentioned here, yogurt. Yogurt, plenty of yogurt. When you have 900,000 cows, you're going to have a lot of yogurt. And rice, because you have land, rice would be abundant. So still today, in India, either a young boy or even the mother, after cooking the midday meal, it would be taken. One would normally, we're trying to do that, it's very difficult actually in our small project in South India, to have just, because you have to go out, things are meant to, work in, on the land, taking the cows out. These things are meant to take place early in the morning. So one has a very simplified meal in the morning and has a condensed morning program to go out before it gets too hot. Because in India, especially in the summertime, the sun from even early morning is already hot. So, by reading these descriptions of the pastimes of Krishna, Srila Prabhupada explains, I believe it's in the 8th canto, when I came across this particular purport, it is like one of those, what you call, purports out of the blues, unexpected purport, because it's in the chapter Matsya Incarnation, very famous purport, where Srila Prabhupada happens to, in that context of avatars or incarnation, he explains how Krishna and Balaram, they are the original, they are actually the source of all incarnations. And they have especially descended in this material world to show us directly and to show us personally how we should be living. They have come to establish or set the standard which is meant to be, we could say, an eternal, which actually is and eternal standard, Krishna and Balarama, and the residents of Vrindavan. What we are seeing here in the material world, in Bhoma Vrindavan, in the Vrindavan of this earthly planet, is eternally going on. These pastimes are eternally going on, as we know, in Goloka Vrindavan. And that is actually the standard. In the same way, this is also something very important, in the same way that bhakti, devotional service, Krishna bhakti nitya siddha, sadhya kabunoi, sarvanandi sudachiti, karai udoi. Krishna bhakti, it is the nitya siddha, eternal perfection for all living entities in the spiritual world. But not only is nitya siddha, or rather Krishna bhakti, our eternal occupation, but also what is going on in the spiritual world in terms of tending cows, in terms of cultivating the land, is also meant to be the eternal occupation for those of us, all of us, who have come here in this material world. So in other words, we have what is called a dual responsibility, dual duty, a dual function, dual dharma, dharma in two features, which is, nowadays, of course, we have lost both. I mean, general society has lost both. People don't know that they are meant to engage in bhakti devotional service, number one. And secondly, people don't know that there's a standard traditional way of living which will meet all of our material necessities and which will help us to be in harmony with other people and also will help us to be in harmony with nature. Now, unfortunately, because we're not doing that, we're not in harmony with other people, rather the opposite. And we are also completely destroying our environment, nature, etc. like that. So this whole, as Prabhupada would coin it, you know, modern edition of modern civilization, because of its very severe major deviation, actually, from these two understandings of dharma, is totally ruining society. And therefore, our Krishna consciousness movement has a tremendous responsibility to bring back this understanding, to introduce this understanding. And the foremost challenge that we all have is to actually do it in terms of becoming Krishna conscious ourselves, which is a big challenge in modern day society. It's a big challenge even amongst our own communities, you know, even living in temples. It's so difficult because of so many factors, the whole atmosphere, the whole ether being totally polluted everywhere. Of course, it is in a spiritual community where the presence of Sri Sri Radha Vrindavan Chandra in all of our temples, where the Lord is actually manifest, directly present in his Archa Vigraha form, it is a more protected, Prabhupada would explain it is like in a desert oasis. It is a special place where one can take advantage to actually help manifest, especially such rural communities, especially this one of New Vrindavan, the first and original holy place created by the presence of Srila Prabhupada, New Vrindavan. New Vrindavan was meant, is meant still, actually, to become an inspiration to other communities. I'm sure Prabhupada had great hopes and expectations that the residents of New Vrindavan, the residents of all similar communities, would follow in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan, and in this way create a situation that would actually give hope to society. Just like here, they would all sit down to eat on a large stone. You don't need any table. Krishna's already provided tables. So we have all heard how Srila Prabhupada has given us, he gave the expression, learning how to live on the lap of material nature. A very major mandate. But Prabhupada actually, his vision was such that normally living on the lap of material nature is, of course, for anybody, especially in modern day society, one cannot relate to that so easily, and not so easily achievable. More easily achievable in Asian countries, actually. So it's like a double challenge in one way to do it. But Prabhupada expected, wanted, and himself started the whole process by coming here in the Western countries, by coming here in New Vrindavan. So New Vrindavan is one of those really rare and unique places because of Srila Prabhupada's presence here, the many instructions he has given, and what's the expression? Standing order. It's an order that's still standing. It is an order that Prabhupada, whatever orders Guru gives, very often it's a matter of time. You see. Just like Srila Prabhupada's whole vision of spreading Krishna consciousness, it was already there before leaving India. Prabhupada, he even spoke about it to some people before even temples were established. So standing, the standing order of Guru, the full mercy of Guru actually can only come when we are able to fulfill such standing orders. Like Srila Prabhupada's own personal realization, he explains, although Srila Prabhupada had received the order as a young man, isn't it, of coming to the Western countries, spreading in the English language Krishna consciousness. It is only much, much later in life that Srila Prabhupada, he was reading one purport from Bhagavatam where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I don't know the verse by heart, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the perfection of a disciple is when he is able to actually fulfill the orders. In other words, we cannot be successful. We cannot please Guru and Krishna unless we not only understand but fulfill the orders of Guru and Krishna. Then we can expect actually the full mercy to come. So when Srila Prabhupada read that explanation, that verse, then I have to go to the West, even though he was, my God, close to 70 at that time. So, it is never too late. It is never too late. And Srila Prabhupada, that order remains. We are also persons who have a very nice philosophy whereby Srila Rupa Goswami is reminding us in the neck of devotion that devotees must hope against hope. You see, sometimes it seems hopeless. It seems hopeless, like how to become Krishna conscious. Not an easy thing. You see, the whole material world is a total distraction. How not to become Krishna conscious? That is Maya. Maya Devi's Mahamaya, Durga Devi, her business is how to keep us away from Krishna. Unless we become fully qualified, then she will no longer test us. But until we are not ready, she will test us in so many ways to prepare us actually to become qualified to serve Krishna. So that in the same way that we have this challenge to actually become Krishna conscious in a very challenging place, you know, material world, we also have a challenge to manifest, to realize this other order and expectation of Srila Prabhupada. Because actually our philosophy clearly explains that the Krishna conscious way of life, we have perfect philosophy. Not only we have the perfect philosophy, but Krishna has also given us a perfect way to show and demonstrate, or perfect way to live that philosophy by living in harmony with his nature and by actually realizing this lifestyle, by demonstrating this lifestyle which every day Krishna Balaram were living in Vrindavan. We have to, it's one of the foremost expectations given to us by Srila Prabhupada. And actually, it is there in terms of the philosophy also that Sruti and Smriti. The Sruti is especially dealing with the spiritual dimension. Spiritual, we could say, the tattva, you see. The teachings, direct spiritual teachings given by Krishna. Whereas the Smriti is meant to actually realize, is meant to demonstrate what is Sruti. And they go hand in hand. Just like when we say he's a devotee, well, if we observe that person who is described as a devotee, well, we have to see that he's wearing tilak, having japa beads, you know, that he has some kind of features of a devotee, that he's doing some devotional service somehow or other. Of course, one can be a devotee also without wearing tilak or without having a Brahma thread. But the externals are actually helpful. They're helpful, although not essential, because that's part of our philosophy as well, that we don't just judge externally. But at the same time, we must demonstrate in our activities, at least in our consciousness, in our words, in our activities, that we are devotees. So part of being devotee, part of developing devotee communities, is to actually come to this point of of demonstrating this ideal simplified lifestyle, and it is very practical. It is meant to be very practical. Just like nowadays, because people, not only in the Western countries but in Asian countries, have taken so much to mechanization, industrialization, modernization, more and more material development, so-called economic development, the whole lifestyle is changing. I mean, when that's happening on the kind of scale that it is happening now in a place like India, then it is scary. Mm-hmm. India, the land of Dharma, the land where the people living in India are meant to actually show by example. But that is very severely threatened, and the whole lifestyle. It is calculated that maybe less than 30% of one can find only, well, it's in one sense surprising, still substantial, 30% of the villages, according to some experts, are still somewhat intact. Which means that for the devotees who are preaching in India, you can go to those places. They're still doing a lot of the traditional, still practicing a lot of the traditional ways. What they need is probably to be infused with Krishna consciousness so that they don't lose that, actually. But very severe, a few months back, actually, one person who is called, what's the name, Panchayat Raj. Anyone from India here? You know what is Panchayat Raj? You know what is Panchayat? So Panchayat Raj, they have people who are responsible to oversee many villages. Like he has 120 villages that he's, this is some kind of, I believe, government post. To oversee, I don't know in detail the specifics of what they do, but they're familiar with village development and whatnot. He was visiting our temple a few months back, and he was mentioning that for the first time in the history of India, the population of people in the villages has come down below 70%. Which is significant, because there's another survey that I was reading before I had met with him. That survey's findings were that by the year 2020, which is a short 10 years from now, the population of people living in the villages would be down to 50%. And it's like, you know, the trend is following here in North America, where it's, what, 2 or 3% of the population in North America are connected. It's very important for us, I'll finish on this point, very important for us to know, to understand that actually these kind of trends, they are actually directly connected with dharma. How we live, how we utilize Krishna's energy, how we look after or don't, rather, look after cows, as is the case all over the world, is directly connected with dharma, the principles of dharma. So in other words, we have a dual responsibility in upholding the principles of Dharma in terms of ourselves on a daily basis, endeavoring to maintain our Krishna consciousness. And secondly, because we are meant to be para upakara, you see, not just self-centered. We're not meant like people who are yogis at times, who simply like to be secluded and meditate and are concerned about their own spiritual advancement. So the Prabhupada explains that Vaishnava, he is very paradukkanduki. He is very sorrowful about the miseries of other living entities, about the state of affairs that is affecting other living entities. And because we don't have rajarshis, wise leaders, saintly leaders, therefore we are witnessing, we are living. It is very difficult actually for devotees. We are victims, actually. We are victims of very major deviations of Dharma, which is affecting everyone. So we have, in other words, we have a duty and responsibility to bring about changes on that level as well, in terms of demonstrating. The best way to do that is to ourselves come to the point of reviving. Or nice quote by Srila Prabhupada, which I had captured one word, but there are actually two very important words in one phrase, very important phrase spoken by Srila Prabhupada many years ago, that one of the aims of this Krishna consciousness movement, it is twofold: to bring about a complete overhaul in society, and then Prabhupada continues, and to revert to what is actually, you know, he uses the word to revert to what is actually meant to be the norm. So, you know, we try to explain that to some people, the general understanding of most people, and even sometimes of our devotees, is that it's not possible to go back. We're going in one direction. Modern civilization is advancing, progressing, so-called progressing. But actually, Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas, all of our acharyas, and our shastras also support that. One of the aims, one of the important aims, actually the first of the secondary aims of this Krishna consciousness movement is to revert to a saner, a more sane way of living, which is what is being described here, especially in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the challenge remains, the order stands, and it's the duty and responsibility of every single member of this society, well, to pray to Krishna and to, I guess, introspect and see how, even though we don't entertain the word impossible, as we all know what Prabhupada said about that. It is a word in the fool's dictionary. It doesn't exist. So everything is possible, even the impossible is possible. And therefore, yeah, we all have this opportunity to think about it, meditate on it, and especially pray to Srila Prabhupada, to Sri Sri Radha Vrindavan Chandra, to see how this can be realized within our ISKCON society, and including, if not beginning with New Vrindavan. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Objections?
You spoke earlier part of the lecture how the village life, Vedic culture, village life is synonymous.
Yes.
I'm paraphrasing.
Yes.
And how do you picture a Dwarka and a Ayodhya and Indraprastha as part of the Vedic culture if the village life is in the core?
Yes. How many cities? Dwarka, Indraprastha. When we say that the Vedic culture is primarily, it is agrarian based. Mm-hmm. We don't say that there are no cities. Mm-hmm. You see, cities are primarily there for the rajas, for the kings. Mm-hmm. Krishna is king in Dwarka. Kamsa is king in Mathura. Was king for a short time. When Krishna went there, he no longer remained as king. So, yeah, kings were all over the place, so they had sometimes some small, you see, city-like place. And the big kings had big cities. But the majority of people were not living in the cities. Majority of people, like if you go to Cambodia, you can still get a sense of how it must have been. You see, there's only a few a few cities even right now, and maybe probably one of the few places on the planet where more than 90% of the people are still in the villages, and where what's going on in the villages today, it is what was going on in the villages like 1,000 years ago. Because village life doesn't change, not meant to change, and should not change. And it's only changed actually very recently, since the Industrial Revolution, a couple of 200 years ago. So cities are there, we don't deny that, but cities are very different than today's cities. Cities of Dwarka, cities of Indraprastha, Hastinapur, they are reminding, they are there to help one also become Krishna conscious. Everything is very, you know, the descriptions are there in the Bhagavatam about the cities. Everything is, you know, clean air, fresh, and the elephants come and waters. They have imitation machines, right, who come around with their trunks and water plants. At least they have in Montreal, I don't know. So cities are there, we don't deny that. But the cities, the population in those cities is very small percentage of the population. So in this way there is a harmony. But it is undeniable fact that the vast majority of people are in the country, are growing their food, are looking after cows, and also those who are in the city, like the king's foremost responsibility, preoccupation is to make sure that agriculture is going on nicely. Because the king knows that the most important activity, the whole economy of my country is connected with agriculture. And therefore the king is very busy making all kinds of irrigation plans and systems so that there's sufficient water, because water is like is essential. And he is there, he makes so many different arrangements to protect his country so that there's no disruption, so that the citizens are peaceful and they're on a daily basis going about their business. And he helps the citizens in many ways so that, you know, he gives them free land, helps in the dwellings, the homes in those days are very simplified. Like in Asian countries, you don't need, I mean, the flood comes, your house goes. So you build it up again within 2 days, you know. So that's why I see in the Vedic culture, I was mentioning this point, is there in our Shastra. I mean, the majority of people live actually in these kind of countries. And I mean, it's not to discourage anyone. I mean, I'm from Canada. But actually, these countries, Western countries, especially very cold climate countries, are not the most ideal. But Prabhupada did say that one can produce You see, this lifestyle, one can introduce vanashram and this simplified lifestyle anywhere, although in some places, obviously, it will be more of a challenge, you know, when you have snow 7 months, you know, 7 months of the year and whatnot. But still, Prabhupada expected and wanted that we, even in Canada in the early in the early 20th century, there are books, historical books, even documentaries, how people were living off the land in those early days. And they had, you know, 10, 12, 14 children or more. And they were happy. Yes? This, of course, is a false argument because before the 60s, as I mentioned, like in Canada, and the same thing was here, the, you know, the early settlers, they were living off the land. It is possible, although granted I agree, more difficult, more of a challenge, but people would make their preserves, they would have their, you can grow, in most places, of course, I mean, if you go really up north, I mean, if you're an Eskimo, you forget about, you can't do it. But in most places in North America, you can grow, even though the season is very short, and people would know. I mean, my parents, my mother, I'm sure some of your parents would keep things for the whole winter. And it is only possible when we don't forget the main aim or the main purpose, and that's why people present this argument, because they don't know that the main aim of life is to become Krishna conscious, self-realization. So Vedic culture, that's the primary thing. And therefore we accept, for example, that as part of our karma, that we're born in North America, for example. So we do the best that we can. And Srila Prabhupada would not, that's important for us as devotees, Srila Prabhupada would not have established New Vrindavan, would not have given the order, or would not have mentioned that it is possible anywhere to actually live in this way. In other words, in the same way, in the same manner that it is possible to become a devotee, to be Krishna conscious, to chant the holy name anywhere, it is also possible, but it will vary. It will vary in some places. Like, I mean, as you rightly mentioned, like in Europe, Eastern Europe, in Asian countries, you can grow food all year round. You don't practically need any dwelling, except in the rainy season. But in other countries, like here, well, yeah, it's more of a challenge, but it is still possible. And it is what's important for us to remember, to understand, and to convince others also, it is desirable. But that's only understandable, especially if one knows that actually the primary aim of life is to actually develop spiritually. But even some people who are not God conscious, they understand that the present trend, present way of modern life, that's not the way we should be doing things, huh? And there, you know, I've been reading reports how some professional people here in North America, after, you know, working for 30 years or so, very qualified people materially, hey, this is, you know, the whole situation is getting worse and worse. I'm not happy living under this kind of tension and whatnot. So they're giving up and coming back to a more simplified lifestyle. So philosophically and in terms of practical ways as well. Now, I mean, there are many things to be said, and of course it's the end of the class, so. But whatever arguments are there, we as devotees should become expert, because that's one of the qualities, devotee, daksha, expert, should be expert in bringing forward the various arguments to defeat whatever opposing rationale, so-called, that we should simply continue with our modern way of life, etc., etc. We become obviously definitely conditioned to this way of life, but it is of utmost, I would say, it is causing, as we see, as we should understand, utmost destruction actually on all levels. And therefore, one of many, many reasons why we should combat and work, at least work towards returning to this, to what is actually the norm of life. I think I should end here, because, that's it. Jai Mantarasma Bhagavatam ki, Jai Sri Prabhupada ki, Jai Gaur.